It really is a broader challenge than just the immediate visible military things that we know of when we speak about, you know, China's rise.
Political moves to counter threats. It's Tuesday, March 23rd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, the story of a Cambodian doctor reacting to events and 15 years of tweets. It's all on today's VOA Asia. European Union foreign ministers meeting Monday in Brussels approved sanctions over abuses in China, Myanmar, and Russia as the bloc expands measures targeting global rights breaches. The 27 nations are due to place four Chinese officials and one state-run entity on a blacklist over Beijing's crackdown on the Uyghur minority after ambassadors gave the go-ahead last week. The highly symbolic move is the first time Brussels has hit Beijing over human rights abuses since it imposed an arms embargo in 1989 after Tiananmen Square. China's foreign ministry has warned that Beijing will react with a firm hand against any punishment over its actions in the western Xinjiang region. The measures are part of a package of human rights sanctions targeting a dozen people that also includes individuals in Russia, North Korea, Eritrea, South Sudan, and Libya, according to diplomats. Britain pledged to counter what it calls the strategic threat posed by China as it set out its new 10-year defense strategy this past week. Britain is seeking to carve out a new role on the world stage outside of the European Union, according to the Policy Review, as Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
In presenting the so-called integrated review to Parliament, Prime Minister Boris Johnson said China presents a systemic challenge to Britain's security.
There is no question that China will pose a great challenge for an open society such as ours. But we will also work with China where that is consistent with our values and interests, including building a stronger and positive economic relationship.
Several lawmakers accused Johnson of going soft on China by seeking deeper trade links. The Prime Minister said those seeking a new Cold War with Beijing were mistaken. He also underscored Britain would remain committed to NATO and security in Europe.
And from this secure basis, we will seek out friends and partners wherever they can be found, building a coalition for openness and innovation, and engaging more deeply in the Indo-Pacific.
To demonstrate that engagement, Britain's new aircraft carrier, the HMS Queen Elizabeth, will make its maiden voyage to the Indo-Pacific later this year. Prime Minister Johnson will visit India next month. Britain plans to spend $292 billion on new military equipment over the next 10 years. Countering China's assertiveness will require a broad response, says analyst Viola Nouwens.
This won't just be about sending ships to the region or planes to the region. It will really be about equally investing in new technologies, be that quantum, be that AI, cyber, space, you name it. So it really is a broader challenge than just, I think, the immediate military, visible military things that we know of when we speak about, you know, China's rise and assertiveness in the Indo-Pacific itself.
Britain cannot compete with China's military expansion, says Nouwens.
We do have limited resources, so it is really about finding those angles that the UK already has real strengths in and working with partners and allies on others to try and shore up capabilities, shore up knowledge.
Prime Minister Johnson said the United States would remain Britain's closest ally. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin are visiting allies Japan and South Korea, with China at the top of the agenda.
We will push back if necessary when China uses coercion or aggression to get its way.
China has accused Washington of disrupting regional peace and stability. Beijing has yet to respond to Britain's plans for greater engagement in the Indo-Pacific. Meanwhile, Britain also announced in its defense report that it will raise the cap on its nuclear arsenal from 180 to 260 warheads. Critics say that would breach Britain's commitment under the Non-Proliferation Treaty. The government says it is a cap, not a target. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. European Union approves sanctions over China and Myanmar abuses. Democracy activists freed from Chinese jail back in custody in Hong Kong. Fire guts hundreds of shelters in Rohingya refugee camp. Australia floods disrupt COVID-19 vaccinations. Scientists chasing origins of COVID-19 add Southeast Asia to search. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia and our voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. Escaping the Cambodian genocide to a refugee camp in Thailand, 17-year-old Lyneth Lim wanted to become a medical doctor after meeting an American dentist. Her journey in the medical field began in 1982, but ended as COVID-19 hit its peak in America. VOA's Chetra Chap reports.
Hi, I'm Dr. Lyneth Lim. I'm one of the hospitalists working in Central California.
This is Cambodian-American medical doctor Lyneth Lim. She found herself on the front lines when the coronavirus hit her city in Fresno, California.
I work mainly in the emergency room in one of the level one trauma center in Central California. I've seen a lot of patients coming through with COVID. This disease is real and it's deadly.
Her brother says the 58-year-old physician began experiencing COVID symptoms in the days leading up to January 18. That is when he found her dead in the home where she lived alone. Dr. Lyneth's colleague called me and asked me to check up on her because she had missed her shift and hadn't returned their call. When I got there, I knocked on the door really hard, but no one answered. I then used my key to get in and disable the alarm. I knew immediately that she had already passed away when I saw her lying on the sofa, seemingly not breathing. An autopsy ordered by police found the coronavirus caused Dr. Lim's death. 5 weeks before Lyneth Lim's passing, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration authorized the first emergency use of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine for selected healthcare workers and elderly people. But she decided not to take it, telling her colleagues that her body reacted severely to even normal flu shots. Some individuals may be allergic to the vaccines. This group will not benefit from the vaccines. She might have been one of them. But think about it. Even though she was at high risk, she was still committed to her obligation to help COVID patients. Lyneth Lim and her family fled Cambodia because of the Khmer Rouge, a communist regime that killed some 1.7 million in the late 1970s. She arrived in America in 1982 at the age of 20. And two decades later, she became one of the first Cambodian-American survivors of the killing fields to have graduated from a U.S. medical school. When we first got here, it was really difficult because we didn't know the culture, speak the language, and understand the living system here. Lyneth Lim, who never married, started practicing internal medicine in 1996. When she got her first paycheck, which was quite large as a medical doctor, she donated all of it to the church that we always went to when we were in college.
In 1997, she began using her own money to buy medicines or gather tons of medicines from wherever she could find, and then regularly brought them to Cambodia by herself.
So I want to take this opportunity to thank the community who made this organization very successful.
One of the earliest members of CHEPPA, or Cambodian Health Professionals Association of America, Dr. Linat Lim, was dedicated to giving back to her communities, both in Cambodia and America.
Even though she was lonely and never had her own family, she enjoyed seeing other people's happiness. Being a doctor fit her inner drive, which is to sacrifice herself so that others may live.
Just one of more than 500,000 Americans who have died from COVID-19. One life, both ordinary and extraordinary, whose loss is being mourned and remembered. Chatra Chap for VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, dozens of university students in Myanmar's southern city of Dawei marched against the country's military government, chanting, "Our fight must prevail." The students called for the release of Aung San Suu Kyi and other democratically elected leaders who have been detained by the military government since the February 1st coup. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad, as always, to have you with us on VOA Asia. Many of us use Twitter. You probably do. We do at VOA Asia, as well as myself, at VOA Stevenson. The popular online platform is celebrating its 15th anniversary. With 330 million users around the world, the company that once called itself the free speech wing of the Free Speech Party has been forced to contend with abuses of its platform. Tina Trin tweets. She also tells us about it.
In 2006, Twitter co-founder Jack Dorsey sent out the first ever tweet. Hard to believe the social network turns 15 this month, and that original tweet is currently fetching $2.5 million in an online auction. What started out as a microblog with 140-character-long entries has since become a megaphone for celebrities, world leaders, and activists the world over.
It has literally been, you know, kind of that digital commons or public sphere where people can interact. It's also very simple in terms of a user interface, something they've kept the whole time.
Dheeraj Murthy, a professor and author of two books on Twitter, says there's a certain level of democratization that remains compelling to users.
People being able to be very candid, being able to get responses very quickly, and being able to get responses from people they may not have got responses from.
The speed and scale at which information travels on Twitter has also played a pivotal role in social movements around the world.
The Black Lives Matter movement founders say there would be no Black Lives Matter movement without social media. It was also a catalyst, obviously, during the Arab Spring, the Snow Revolution in Russia, protest movements in Hong Kong and elsewhere in Ukraine.
But the promise of unfettered communication has given rise to conspiracy theories and misinformation, says researcher Sanan Aral.
We studied 10 years of their data, and we found that fake news traveled farther, faster, deeper, and more broadly than the truth in every category of information, and that fake political news was the most viral.
Resulting in one very public figure being banned this year.
What they really need to prioritize and think about moving forward is how they will deal with the rise of the next Donald Trump. It's really hard when you have a figure like that who's probably very good for business.
But in the absence of government regulation, internet ethicist Irina Raikou says Twitter does have a responsibility to moderate content.
And it's going to be really hard in the context of some countries to act as the kind of platform that I think it wants to be, that enables the kind of conversations that it wants to enable.
One thing that many critics agree on is that on its 15th anniversary, the company that once called itself the free speech wing of the Free Speech Party still has some growing up to do. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
That's all the time we have for today's VOA Asia program. Please come again tomorrow at the same time. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead. Be safe. Be well.